Good evening. It's 2300 hours Zulu, and this is South Cars, the South Coast amateur radio service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and good amateur practice. This South Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts, requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found on the World Wide Web at southcars.com and for our digital operation, again, on the World Wide Web at voip.southcars.com. I'm not really your net control this evening. I'm the backup. Your net control for this evening will be K6SUN, Kathy. I'm KC2RMO. My name is Gary, located in Syracuse's beautiful Otter Comstock section with a temperature of 51 degrees. Now, prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Nothing heard. Do we have anybody celebrating a birthday this week? And nothing heard again, as Kathy's fond of saying. That means nobody's getting any older, and that's a good thing. Well, this is the South Cars VoIP Global Family Hour, and the intent of this net is to encourage members and their families and their friends worldwide to enter into an informal social net highlighting third-party traffic through the member station. Our program for this Saturday evening is Expeditions. Interesting topic. And it'll take us places, and to take us along that route, we have our net control for tonight, and that's Kathy, and that's K6SUN, and we'll bring her on right now. Hello there, Kathy.
Well, good evening, Gary, and good evening to everyone connected tonight. And like Gary says, our topic is about expeditions, and usually I do this in April, but for just a couple of the expeditions, but I'm going to do it a little differently tonight. But my location is Vero Beach, Florida. And by the way, my name is Kathy, Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My temperature right now is about 80 degrees. It was a high of 81. It was stormy this morning, but turned out to be a very beautiful day. And Gary, I spent my entire day packing. Taking apart different things and unscrewing different things, wrapping different things, and I'm pretty exhausted tonight, but I am here and I'm hoping to have a lot of fun. So let me pause for just a moment and we'll begin this evening's program. Welcome once again to everyone everywhere to our Saturday evening Global Family Hour, where we always like to talk about some interesting topics. This month we celebrate many things, but tonight I want to share a couple of expeditions that occurred in April. One was in 1947 and one was in 1912. We've discussed these topics before, but I never lose interest in discussing some of these memorable expeditions. I will be discussing both the Contiki and the Titanic. But you may want to discuss those ham expeditions, Christopher Columbus, Magellan, and so forth. But before I begin, are there any memorable expeditions you would like to share? Like to the ham radio shop, to the store, to Home Depot, to the grocery store. You know, and on it goes before we begin talking about Contiki and the Titanic. You know, I normally talk about Contiki and Titanic because it is during the month of April when those events took place. You know, recently we had the Malaysia 370 exposition that has yet to been found. Most recently, the ferry exposition in South Korea, whose occupants were mainly students. And recently, the avalanche that killed 12 in a single deadliest accident on Mount Everest. So at this time, I want to hear from you. What can you tell us, South Cars, myself, about any expositions you have? Remember, any past, present, or future. So I'm throwing it out there for some check-ins.
Well, I'll dive right in there and also see if my audio came up a little bit. Guess I was a little bit low, but this is RMO.
6 Victor, also Kathy, good evening. Just a tad more, but you're getting close, Gary.
All right, I have 2 to start this off, but I'd sure like to hear from some more of you. You've all had those expositions, because if you don't hear about yours, I'm actually going to go into both of mine. So I want to hear about those visits to Home Depot, the visits to the Radio Shack, or the ham radio shop, to the grocery store, maybe just going next door. We've all had expositions that we would like to share. How about bicycle riding, motorcycle riding, anything you've done? We'd sure like you to hear from you. So at this point, I'll throw it out there once again to see if I can get any further check-ins. Gee whiz, I guess none of you have had those great expositions, you know. I know Steve has had a great one with the crawfish lately, so hopefully he'll share that. But let me start with you, Mr. Gary. I know you always go to Home Depot, so maybe that's some good adventures you can talk to us about. Or anything else, maybe going on the road in that nice rain and snow. So what would you like to share with us this evening to start things off, Gary?
Well, thank you, Kath. Yeah, you're talking about my both Stephanie and my, our home away from home is the Home Depot. And our favorite clerk, whom we call Beard Boy. Beard Boy is more like Weird Boy. I can't really begin to describe what happens. This guy, he gets a hold of you. You know, he finds you in the aisle. And you end up listening to the story of his life, including stories about surgeries that most people wouldn't discuss with family members. But we get it. I don't know. Maybe we're magnets or something. I don't know. But we've since routed the bulk of our of our Home Depot trips to the Camillus store whenever possible. You can't avoid this guy. He finds you every time. Expeditions, great topic too. Of course the Contiki is a really cool story. I was telling Stephanie about it earlier today. So that's going to be interesting to hear. Expeditions I've taken. Let me just buy a nickel. I think of, you know, you talk about ham radio, not like de-expeditions, which one of these days, if I hit the lottery, I might do that. Because you got to hit the bucks to do that one. It just made me think of our, was that our last trip to Dayton to the hamvention? Was that when we discovered the U-Washi, or was it the, okay. And I've told this story before, but perhaps later on in the net, we'll tell the story of the U-Washi laundromat, which was one of our great expeditions to Dayton, Ohio,
yes,
for the hamvention.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there was a side trip, and it was associated with the with going to the hamvention. Our secondary goal was to find the U-Washi, so. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later on. But right now, we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO. Back to you, Kath.
Well, Gary, I'm not going to let you off that easy. I remember that story. So, you know, before we get into the Contiki and the Titanic, we may never get back to you. I want you to share that story with everyone now, because that was a great exposition. And you actually going to the Dayton Hamvention, something I've never done. It's probably a great experience, too. So come back aboard, Gary, and tell us about the U-Washi experience.
Well, an experience is exactly what it was, too. Thanks, Kath. First of all, for those who have never been to Dayton, it's really worth doing. You'll hear people say, it's no big deal or anything. But it's really very cool. I do think you have to be prepared to, you're never going to do Dayton in one day. It is very, Much to your advantage to get there early. Get there on the first couple of days if you want to go to take advantage of any of the flea markets. If you get there, like day two and a half or day three, all the good stuff's gone anyway. But we've been to Dayton a couple of times, and it's always pretty cool. It really is. And it's big. It's, you know, and that's another story to tell, how we discovered the second half of the Dayton Hamvention. But that's another story. Maybe we'll do that later. But what we're talking about is the Uwashi Laundromat, which is not in Dayton, Ohio, but rather in Richmond, Indiana, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from Dayton. It's about half an hour yet from there. And let me buy a nickel. And I had come across this place for whatever reason. I do these weird searches on Google, just whatever comes into my mind, and I'll throw it in there, and what you get is what you get, So I first, for whatever reason, did a search that yielded me the U, and it's the letter U hyphen Washi Laundromat in Richmond, Indiana. Now, what Richmond, Indiana has is a classic old school laundromat with these signs that by today's standards are very much politically incorrect, but they're also absolutely hilarious. And there's a Chinese gentleman on these signs, and it's all written in pidgin English. Everything there is pidgin English. So it's like, You lose the coin, so sorry, and it's like, and put address in envelope, we send you, And there's a couple of website articles on this, and I said, I gotta see this, it's like, got to, So since we were right in the neighborhood, one day we decided, it was the last day, it was on our way home, we decided that we were going to find, well, actually, all the days of the stay, we had sought to find this, but without any luck. If you looked up the address, it showed a couple of times, but every time you went to the address, there was nothing there. So I figured, hey, maybe it's an internet hoax, but I wasn't going to give up so easily. So one night, or the last night we were there, I was sitting in the hotel room and I'm going through the phone directory, and it was something like, Simpson Coin Op Laundry Inc. or something like that, and it was located an address that was not far from where we thought would be the Uwashi, from where there were current or old listings for the Uwashi. So I said, let's try it on the way home. What have we got to lose? So we go back to Richmond on the way back, and we follow the GPS instructions, and this it takes you to this part of town that God Himself abandoned, 50 years ago. it is like this totally bizarre part of town, and you have to go over this bridge that's like still under construction and never finished. They're still building it after 100 years. Let me buy a nickel. There's an old Bob Dylan song called Desolation Row. And the Uwashi Laundromat is located on Desolation Row. But we did it. My wife and I, my darling bride, we went into this place. We went down this street, and there, in a white frame building, right next door to Uncle Jim's Liquors, is the Uwashi Laundromat. So I said, "This is it, oh baby, we're good to go, And so I bolt out of the car, and I go in there, and yeah, there it is. There's the signs, and there's the washers, and there's everything. There's also this lady sitting over in the corner, and she's watching us. And she's doing the laundry, but she's watching us, and she's got the evil eye on us. I mean, what are these foreigners doing here?" and she's looking at us like we're bad news. And I'm there with the camera. I'm taking pictures. I'm doing the whole thing. I'm like, "Hey, get a picture of me out front." And she's looking. Finally, the way she's looking didn't really look friendly at all. And I'm saying, if you remember that scene in Animal House you know, where they look at each other, and one guy says, if I were you, I'd be, and the other guy goes, leaving, you know, and you know, that's us, you know. So I said that to Steph, and we left. Well, we're driving out of Richmond, and it occurred to me that I read somewhere that area of Indiana was the birthplace of the Ku Klux Klan. Let me buy a nickel. And I'm saying, you know, she's looking at us really ugly, and this is such a weird area, and you know, I'm wondering what's going to be following us, right? So I'm saying, Steph, go faster, you know? And I'm looking behind us, and we're hauling all the way up to the Ohio border, and I figured we were safe, but you know, I was glad to see that Welcome to Ohio sign, and I was even happier to see Welcome to New York, but finally safe again, you know. But that was our adventure. It was our little Dayton adventure the last time, and I think maybe next year we'll end up going to Dayton too. And I think, you know what? I think this time around we're going back, and we're going to see if we can find that Uwashi again. Back to Matt. This is KC2RMO.
Well, thank you, Gary, and I knew we had to hear about this expedition because it was just as famous as any of the others, and I hope everyone enjoyed that. We've all had them. We've all done things like that, maybe areas that we shouldn't go into, and I've had them here in Fort Pierce. Avenue D, I got myself caught on, and on a dead-end road with very little gas, so that was a great experience for me and something I won't do again. But thank you, Gary, and hopefully you'll come back aboard as we talk about the two disasters. Not two disasters, but two expositions that happened in the month of April. But I'll break with you, and I'm going to call on 6 Victor and see what he would like to share with us. And hopefully it's not the exposition of taking all those screws out and taking the glass doors down and wrapping them all and getting so tired today. But Gordon, come aboard and share with us.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Well, the afternoon nap took care of all that frustration. Thank you. Gary just had me in stitches. Good evening, Gary, and Stephanie there in the background. The witchy-watchy laundry. You know, talking about pigeon English. You know, Gary, I was you know this. I was born in the Hawaiian Islands, and my folks had lived out there for years, and boy, were they fluent with pigeon English, and they taught me a little bit as I was growing up. I was pretty good there at one point, but that was a lot of years ago. I don't know what to say about all that. Kathy, you got a great program going here tonight. The Kon-Tiki is something that I've followed most of my life in the respect that I was about 10 years old when the 1947 voyage was first made. And do you know that there's been about 8 or so groups of people that have tried to duplicate that from various points on the earth? You know, starting back in the 50s and in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and then I think the last one was about 2011. Where a raft tried to make a 3,000 or 6,000 mile venture across the waters. And then in 2012, the Norwegians came out with a very elaborate movie on the initial 1947 voyage. And it did very, very well in the box offices and the ratings. In one of the most expensive films that I think the Norwegians had ever pulled for. So I'm interested in listening to that. Let me buy a nickel for a second. I don't know, when you come down to expeditions, there's an awful lot of things we could probably throw in the hat. You know, don't forget field day. Sometimes that's a really a big thing, amateur radio field days. And I can think of some of my adventures of canoeing in the state of Florida through the alligator packs. That'll keep you sharp. And the only last comment I've got for Gary and Stephanie and their comments about Home Depot. Home Depot, to me, and Walmart are synonymous. The similarities are just beyond trying to describe in detail. Go ahead, Kathy, KY6V, and thank you.
Well, Gordon, thank you so much. I never thought of comparing the two, but I can see what you're talking about. I'm actually going to head into Home Depot sometime soon. I need to be looking for maybe some more rugs. I don't know. I've gotten my big rugs there, but I haven't been in Home Depot in quite some time. So that would be an adventure. Well, ladies and gents, before I go into talking about the Contiki and the Titanic, I'd like to hear from you about your expositions. Anything that you'd like to share before we move on? And that's why I called out both Gordon and Gary have come aboard with their experiences. But let's see if anyone else would like to come aboard before I begin talking about those two adventures, the Contiki and Titanic. So anyone anywhere want to come aboard?
Victor Hotel.
Oh, why not? RMO.
And Victor X-Ray Papa.
All right, that's just super. I have a VH and RMO and VXP. And Steve, I enjoyed looking at those pictures. Now, were you any one of those in those pictures? I didn't think so. Where did that take place? And actually, ladies and gentlemen, Steve sent me, I think, 43 pictures of how they do crawfish in Louisiana. Actually, one great one was a big front-loaded tractor loaded with it. And then, Steve, you can tell me, do you have to shuck all that shell before you can eat that crawfish? So thank you for being here tonight, Steve, and maybe you'd like to share that with us. A KF5VH from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, come aboard.
Well, good evening, everyone. Steve, KF5VH from Lafayette, Louisiana. I'm glad you enjoyed the pictures. None of the people in the pictures were me. That's one of the advantages of taking the picture. And there are no pictures of people actually going through the process of eating the crawfish, because at that time I was busy eating. But I wasn't planning on mentioning crawfish right now. And I even drugged my feet a little bit so other people could get in there that had stories about expeditions. But let me mention that tomorrow I'll be talking about Paquet. And if you'd like a preview into that, look on the website in the Sunday morning rag chew. But it might be something that you would like to try tomorrow. And also maybe we could get the NCSs and everyone not to mention the topic of next week's Global Family Hour. I've put a picture on the website, the mystery topic on the Global Family Hour for next week, and let's see if people can guess what the topic is next week. So that's it from here, Kathy. Back to you, and hope everyone has a nice evening. KF5VH, back in it. Oh, I moved the mouse. Here we go.
Well, thank you, Steve, and you've perked my interest, and actually I came up with the schedule, so I've got to try to think what next week is going to talk about. So I'll have to look at that when the net's over. But thank you for Paquet. I think you talked about that maybe last year as well. So thanks for being here tonight, and I hope that you and your family have a very special Easter tomorrow as well. So, but I remember listening to you today. I think it was the AM connection, or maybe it was the SSIN, walking that puppy. You sounded so much out of breath. So that little puppy must have been pulling you along. But thank you, and hopefully you'll come back aboard as we share this evening's program. But let me pick up Mr. RMO once again and see what he would like to share with us.
Well, thank you, Kath. What is that, per K? Butter. Perquet? Butter. No. I'm freaky tonight. Steph and I were working downstairs today, and I think I inhaled too many paint fumes, and I think that's it's interesting. This whole topic is really good because that is something that Steph and I like to do. We like to raid on. Yeah, it could be. Steph and I like to take, our little trips and we did a great little expedition to New York City just a couple of months ago that I think was one of our best ones yet. I really do. It was awful quick, but it was really good. But we get in that car and we go we haven't been deported from Canada yet. We go there a lot, but the authorities have been kind. Mostly warnings, really, so it's been all right, we've ended up a lot of different places, and that's a lot of fun. And I would say to anybody you take your significant other and pick a spot on the map and just go sometime, because that's a lot of fun. And we've had some of our most fun times I think in that car out on the road, and it's just good. It's good for you, and a lot of fun too. So that's Uncle Gary's marital advice. We have done that before, and that's a fact. There's a place in Erie, Pennsylvania called Eaton Park, Eaton Park. It's exactly the opposite of how you'd normally think it, park and eat. It's Eaton Park. Why they did that, I don't know, but that's Pennsylvania, and they do things kind of differently, at least in that part of the state. So, but we were there one day and driving around on our way probably to the Home Depot. And, we were getting hungry, and, it'd be really nice to go to Eaton Park. And it's only 5 hours, so boom, we're in the car, and we're there. And it was a good lunch too. Was that the day that I got the free birthday?
No. On the way home from something.
Okay, all right. We didn't really tell a fib and say it was my birthday.
No, she knew it wasn't your birthday.
Yeah, it was just the.
She wanted to do it,
and I wasn't going to say no, So but that was decent. But no, seriously, though, I would really say that that's just a wonderful thing to do, and I don't know if other people do that. It's just all of a sudden, it's like, let me buy a nickel. Yeah, I don't know if people will just go out of their way 5 hours for a lunch, but it's just a great thing to do, to spontaneously spontaneously get in the car. And pick a spot and go. It's just a fun thing. I can remember doing that. My dad would do that. We'd get my mom and the kids in the car, and this big old 51 Roadmaster. Which way? Where do we want to go? I don't know. What way are we facing? And it's north. Okay, north. We're going north, and we'd go on an adventure there, end up with some ice cream, and just drive the whole day until the kids pooped out, and that was it. It's a good thing to do, a lot of fun, and we will go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Well, Gary, thanks so much. You have had so many funny expositions to share with everyone, and I think you said spontaneously, and a lot of times you do things like that, quite often. You want to go somewhere and you have an eventful time at the store, or you have an eventful time and wherever you go. So thank you, Gary, and hopefully soon I'll start talking about the Contiki and Titanic if time allows. But it's interesting hearing from each and every one of you about your expositions and your experiences. So, Rick, I'm going to throw it your direction. Why don't you talk about some of your experiences? Those special times you've maybe taken trips and gone to the store or been out on the road or anything else you'd like to share this evening. So N1VXP, thanks for being here tonight. Welcome to the Global Family Hour and come aboard.
This is N1TXP. Yeah, thinking back, I can remember, my early days in school up in Michigan. It was in April, and the weather was kind of like what we're getting now. It was kind of warm, and we went on to a field trip. It was an all-day affair, and the teacher said to us the day before, she said, "Now you got to bring some money because we're going to stop for supper on the way home." And she wouldn't tell us what we were going to do. So we're all there in the bus trying to figure out, well, we're going to go to this restaurant, no, that restaurant. And this was right at the time when McDonald's first opened up. And we started slowing down, and we saw the McDonald's, and we're like, I said, "Oh, no, we're going to McDonald's." And everybody on the bus was like, "What?" And sure enough, that's where we pulled in. The teacher had, suggested that we take something like $5 per student, for dinner. And we're like, okay, wow, we're going to have $5 in our pocket. Well, I went in, I got a hamburger, a fry, and a soft drink. And I gave the $5, and they gave me $4 and like 12 cents. And I'm like, is that all? And I went back. Teacher wouldn't let me do it again. I said, "I want to get another one." She says, "Nope, you only ordered once. And you got all that food for, less than a dollar. Let me drop for a second." So, she thought about it, and she said, "Well, you got to let all the other kids order their food, and if we got time, you can get another one." So I did, and I still had quite a bit of money left over. I was like, okay. And it was a lot of fun. It was quite an experience. Of course, I was like maybe 6 or, I think it was like 6 or 7 years old when it happened. And it was quite an experience. I got home, and I told my parents about, what we had done. Went to the, went to a, the Henry Ford Museum. And that's over, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it should be around Dearborn, Michigan, which is near Detroit. And I gave my father the what was left over, the $5, and he looked at the money and he says, "And you ate supper with that little bit of money left over, or that bit of money left over?" And my brother said, "Wow, you did really good." So my father said, "No, you keep the change. You keep the bills. I'll keep the change." And I'm like, okay. So I had $3, and I was like, "Wow, $3 back then." I was thinking, "Oh, I have a lot of money. Now I can have some fun." And quite an experience. But the one that I keep in mind was in 1970, Easter Sunday. I decided I was going to get together with family for Easter Sunday dinner. And this was April 10th, 1970. Let me drop for a second. The weather wasn't really that bad. It was kind of chilly. But they said, "Well, there's a chance of snow showers or snow flurries." Well, by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we had a full-fledged blizzard or snowstorm. By 1 o'clock, this started at about 10 o'clock Sunday morning. By 1 o'clock Monday morning, we had a foot and a half of the heavy, wet snow on the ground. I was supposed to go to work that Monday. I called my boss. I had his home phone number. And I called him about 5 o'clock in the evening. I said, "I'm not going to be able to get to work tomorrow, or if I do, I'll be late." And he was like, here at the time, I was living in London, Connecticut, and I was visiting in Hartford. And he says, "No, you can make it, you can make it." I'm like, "I can't get out of town." I said, "Check the news." Now, this was long before they had the Doppler radar and all the great weather forecasting that they got today. We had a foot and a half of the heavy, wet snow. Everybody was snowed in. Nobody could go anywhere. And sure enough, by the time about noon, I got out, headed down to New London. And by the time I got down there, they only had an inch of snow. We had the foot and a half up in Hartford. And, you know, I mean, it was really a mess. My cousin, he was on his way home from work, and he got snowed in. I mean, he couldn't even go anywhere. Left the car on the side of the road. That morning, we went to find it. We couldn't find the car. It was buried in the snow mound put out by the plow. Let me drop one more time. So my experience was, we got to dig that car out. And we started digging and digging and digging. We finally did get it out. Of course, it being a nice, small, compact car, it was not too hard to do. But still, the fact it was completely covered, you couldn't even see it. All you could see was an antenna sticking out of the snow at first. And it was an experience that April is a month. You never know what to expect in life. And I always think, wow, I don't want to plan anything in April unless I really have to, because you never know what can happen. And I think this year I could have planned a couple of good trips if I only knew the weather would be more summer weather. We've had more 80-degree temperatures in April than I can remember for quite a while. In fact, 70s, the same thing. We should be only in the 60s for a high and the upper 30s for a low, and we've been getting 70 to 80, I would say at least probably 8 or 9 days out of this month so far. But like I say, it's you never know what to plan in April. N1GXP, back to net control.
Well, Rick, I sort of agree. You know, as you well know, I was born and raised in the state of Michigan, and that's true. I mean, like I've often said, you couldn't plan anything till July. And I think the upper part of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the upper peninsula of Michigan was bombarded with about 16 inches of snow, I think, this past week. So you never know. You never know what's going to happen. I know what my April pretty much is down here in the state of Florida. It's actually testing. But I agree. You never know what's going to happen. That's what makes life so interesting. So with that, you are at the end of my list. I'm going to throw it out there for any additional comments about what we've talked about thus far before I move on into talking a little bit about the Contiki and hopefully the Titanic. So those were two expositions that had experiences during the month of April. So anyone anywhere wish to come aboard?
6 Victor, recheck.
All right, 6 Victor, it looks like you're the only one to come back aboard with a recheck. Thanks for being here, and welcome back aboard.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Good evening to Rick up there in Ohio and Steve out in Louisiana. Steve, I just looked at the website, and it's precious. Enjoyed it very much. Taking a look at the picture in detail for the mystery topic tells me that it was probably of an era that picture was taken, that they didn't have bucket trucks. So I suspect somebody had to shimmy up that pole. And if you remember where I was born, I've got some stories to tell you about that mystery subject also when we get to it. Let me buy a nickel here, Kathy. Some great stories here tonight. And I think I mentioned early on when I first checked in one of the expeditions that I went on, which is really more of a experiment, was canoeing, you know, through an alligator group. This happened down here in Florida many years ago, just off of one of the tributaries in and off of Lake Okeechobee. And it reminded me of something that happened to you and I just the other day. This place that Kathy and I are moving into, has a beautiful canal off the back of the property. And when the place was being showed to us, one of my questions was, are there any alligators in that canal? And we were told yes. In fact, one of the neighbors recently had taken a picture of a 8-foot alligator that was swimming around out there in the canal. Now, Kathy knows where I'm leading this subject at the moment, but I got back home that evening and had a couple of minutes, and I said, I wonder. So I got onto my Yellow Page Google search engine and started typing, can alligators climb a tree? And the answer came back, yes. So my next question is, can crocodiles climb a tree? And the answer came back, yes. Well, we've got about a 5-foot cyclone fence that separates the canal from the back portion of the property. So I typed in, can an alligator climb a chain link fence? And the answer came back, yes. Let me buy a nickel. So in desperation, I typed just one more thing. How fast can an alligator run? And the answer came back, in 30 feet, it can maintain 35 miles an hour. And I said, oh boy. Go ahead, Kathy, KY6V.
Well, Gordon, thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I'm thinking of Miss Cuddles, who likes these little lizards. She likes to watch them run across the screen. And they're not very big. They're about 3 inches. And, you know, she always gets them. And I'm thinking, what's going to happen to her when she sees this 8-foot alligator? And will she run the opposite way like she does with a storm? So thank you for coming back aboard, and I want to thank everyone for sharing your experiences. But I'm going to share a little bit about both the Contiki and the Titanic tonight. And you know, both of these had experiences. Of course, you know about the Titanic, the sinking. And the Contiki, you know, it was just a balsa wood vessel. And it didn't sink, but it did crash onto an island. But both of these had ham-related radio, you know, stories, and I'm hoping to share that. But at any point as I move through this, if you know about the ham radio part of each of those, I'd sure like you to come aboard. But let me pause here. I'll begin talking first about the Contiki. And I'll pause every once in a while so I can get some check-ins to come back aboard. But at any point you want to share some more experiences, expositions, I sure hope that you will. But let me drop it here for just a moment. You know, we're now going to continue with a discussion and an explanation of the Contiki, followed by, of course, of the Titanic, if time allows. Both are ham-related, like I said, expositions. Many people who grew up in the 50s and the 60s would have laughed at anyone if asked, what is the Contiki exposition? Unfortunately, since today you can't learn about it by watching TV unless it's a history channel, it seems an increasingly number of people think a Contiki is what you might order if you want to try something other than a Mai Tai. You know, in 1947, everyone was telling the Norwegian explorer Thor Heyerdahl it couldn't be done. His theory was that Indians from Peru had sailed to the South Pacific sometime in their distant past. It had been stated that they couldn't get there because they had no boats. All they had were rafts made of balsa wood. So I want to share a bit about this exposition with you tonight. You know, as their journey began, they observed 50 blue water porpoises at one side of the raft. Some of the whales were longer than the raft. The sea was filled with life, tuna fishes, flying fishes, dolphins, sharks, whales, and turtles. The crew would fish for sharks with their bare hands. The Contiki explorers discovered the legendary snake mackerel and had a rare sighting of the whale shark. Herodal had experiences with two specimens of the snake mackerel, a fish which had never previously been seen alive by man, when they jumped aboard from out of the deep. Let me pause once again. The whale shark was so big that as it swam under the raft, the explorers could see its huge flat head on one side and its tail on the other. After about an hour of the whale shark circling the raft, a crew member rammed a harpoon into its skull. The whale shark simply broke the harpoon and swam away. You know, the Kon-Tiki was the name given to the raft in this 1947 exposition to show there was no technical reasons to prevent people from South America settling Polynesia in the South Pacific. The team went to Peru, where they used trees and other native materials to construct a balsa wood raft. Now, before I go on talking to you about that event, has anyone ever been in a balsa wood craft? You know, a canoe is about the same. I have an experience in canoe. It was my first and last time I'd ever get in one. Didn't know how to balance myself. Fell out of the boat, fell out of the canoe, out in the middle of the water, and would not get in the canoe again. So, at this point, can anyone tell me if they've been in a canoe or maybe just a raft and had an experience? And so let me throw it out there for any check-ins.
Victor, X-ray Papa.
And RMO.
And 6 Victor.
Well, just super. I wanted to stop here and see if any of you have had experiences in canoes or maybe that raft. You haven't been on a desert island, but as growing up, were you out on the water in some of those handmade crafts? So let me start with you, VXP, see what you would like to share with us. Come aboard.
Well, I've had two experiences, two different summers, and they were both two-week excursions. One was in the Adirondack, New York. It was a canoe trip for 2 weeks. Really had no comforts of home. Strictly out on the water, in the canoe, and camping as far as a tent, even down to having a campfire as far as cooking outdoor, and quite an experience. The other one was, we started out, we boarded a train. I think it was, I think it was up in Montreal. And we ended up going on a Canadian train up to a particular bridge. It was actually north of Lake Superior. And it was funny because we got on the train. We said to the conductor, we have to get off at bridge number. I forget what the number was. But the idea, the stop was actually at a bridge that went over a stream, got off the train, took all our camping gear, the canoes and everything out of the baggage car, and proceeded to start a two-week canoe trip there. And that was another experience. It was quite fun. Like I say, it took 2 weeks canoeing, white water rafting, and just a general outdoor experience. Let me drop for a second. And the experience we all had one day, we were saying, okay, we're not going to be, we're actually going ahead of our schedule. And we decided at one point we were going to stop and really just have some fun. Well, I didn't realize it, but the trick was, my cousins got out of the canoe, left me in the middle, and they said, well, you're going to have to bring the canoe over to this point, and, we're going to have to, load up and continue on. Well, I was sitting in the canoe. I didn't realize it. They got out of the canoe. I started to move to the back of the canoe, and in the process, I didn't realize my cousins were at each end of the canoe, and they flipped it. Right when I was ready to make a step going back, I went out of the canoe in the water, and I said, that's it. You guys are going to take the canoe. And they did not like it too much. They wanted to leave me in the water. I said, no, you're going to bring me in the canoe back, and you're going to do all the work. And it was an experience that I said, oh, that's going to be the last time I do a trip on a canoe. But it wasn't really actually the last time. I did several others, but quite an experience with 2-week camping trips. It were a lot of fun. Canoes are always great to work with, and never forget it. N1GXP back to net control.
Thanks, Rick, and that's pretty much like mine. You know, always wanted a canoe. Actually bought one for my son. So I always wanted to go in the lakes and just travel that canoe. That experience I had, I was in the middle. I think, I don't know, I think my two brothers possibly were, I think my son was on one end and my brother on the other, and they got out. I decided to stand up, and unfortunately that was the wrong thing to do, and it tipped over. So, you know, along with you, that was an experience that I'll never forget. And, you know, I survived it, but I'm not sure if I'd go back and do it again. Thank you, Rick, and we'll go ahead and share some other information as we go through the Contiki and the Titanic, and then I'll throw it out there for each of you to share your experiences. But RMO, I can't wait to hear from your experience here about the raft and maybe the canoe or the balsa wood or experiences growing up in a boat. So, Gary, thank you for being my backup, and thanks for sharing tonight. Come aboard.
Well, thank you, ma'am, and it is a pleasure, of course, to be here. And you know, if you want to have some fun, go to a Polynesian restaurant and order a Contiki to go along with your poo-poo platter. That ought to get some interest. Yeah, so it'll be kind of neat. Canoe was the name of my favorite cologne in high school. I don't even know if they make this stuff anymore. It smelled good, and all the goyles liked it. No, it wasn't. Didn't use a K. It was the cheap stuff. You know, the real thing had a C. But I seem to recall that as being a pretty good smelling cologne. But I did a lot of canoeing in my youth. I was in the Boy Scouts. Good old troop. It was before. Yeah, it was. The pre cars. But I was in good old Troop 27. And, you know, Rick was talking about the Adirondacks, and we used to go there, you know, every summer. They had a Boy Scout camp there. And I did some really pretty cool things. We climbed a mountain, did a lot of canoeing. I think I actually got a canoeing merit badge. Made it all the way to second class, this kid did. It was those knots they got me. But that was a lot of, you know, we had a lot of adventures there too. I remember we got lost in the swamp one time, and we were tromping around that swamp for about an hour and a half, and we really thought we were done for. And I got stuck in mud that went all the way up to my waist. They called it quick mud. It was like quicksand, and I lost a shoe in it. I had to hop back to camp once we got oriented there. And fortunately, I had another pair of shoes in my pack, so I was good with that. But that was fun. that was a lot of fun, you know. But you talk about Kathy. You talk about some of these things growing up. We actually did. Let me buy a nickel. We actually did have what I will call have a thing. What I'm going to label as the East Side Contiki, which was what we would do. Back in through the east side of the of Syracuse, which the beautiful outer Comstock section is just south of. It's about a mile south of where the east side ends. But back in those days, and still does, there's a creek that runs through that part of the city called Meadow Brook, And they in the Depression, what they had done is they had a WPA project had done flood control for the area, but at some point during the 50s they undid what the flood control guys did, so it went back to its natural state, and Meadow Brook would overflow quite a bit every time it rained heavily, which was bad for homeowners but great for kids, because you'd have flooding like crazy. That whole area had a really high water table, and it just didn't take much rain to make that creek really deep and really fast. So what we would do, as you recall, they had, you know, cars had inner tubes back then, and you'd get four old inner tubes and strap them together with some rope, and then find some boards and strap them to the top of the inner tubes, with rope. And you could launch this thing into the creek, and you could follow it all the way down to there was a pond down by, of course you guys wouldn't know what it is, but it's the Manly Fieldhouse, which is referred to as the Manly Fieldhouse, which is part of the SU Sports Complex, where that is now. But back then it was an Air Force radar site, believe it or not, with a pond in it. And you could go from where I lived down to there on this raft, and you just had one heck of a great time doing it. Hauling it back was another problem, but, you'd take turns, you know, because you'd have a couple of guys on that raft. And you'd come home, and you'd be completely covered with mud and just as nasty as the day is long, and your mother would like, disown you and, you know, sanitize you and the whole thing, you know. But it was great fun, and one of those great memories. That was a kid expedition on the east side Kentucky. So we'll send it back to the net. This is KC2RMO. Back to you, Kath.
Well, thank you, Gary. Now, see, this is a lot more fun than listening to me read a script to you about the Kon-Tiki and the Titanic. It's just hearing from you. I'm thinking of you. I think of Tom Sawyer, you know, on his raft. But thinking of the inner tubes and the wood on top, I'm thinking way back. It's not something I did, but I do remember seeing a lot of that. Seeing some of it. I relate to Gilligan's Island with some of this, you know, stories that we're telling this evening. But, Gary, thank you so much, and Rick, you too. I can't wait to see what Gordon's going to talk about. But, you know, actually, Gary, we have two restaurants down in the middle of Fort Pierce, on the marina, on the intercoastal. One is called the Kon-Tiki. I'm not sure what the other one is called, but they are fantastic restaurants just to sit there and look over the water and just to sit there. So actually, we do have some restaurants called that in this area. So with that, thank you, Gary. I'm going to call on Six Victor. Gordon, what would you like to share with us now? Can you tell me that you actually was on a balsa wood craft, or maybe the inner tubes in the wood, but you have a lot of experience in your childhood. What would you like to share with us?
Well, thanks, Kathy. You know, I'm enjoying this immensely. Let me start off. What I have to say is Tippecanoe and Tyler 2, ladies and gentlemen. Just let your fingers go through the Google search, and you'll learn all about that. You know, I've never had, I've had a fair dealing with canoes, Kathy, but I've never had any bad situations. I haven't tipped it over and had to fight the alligators or anything like that. But I'll tell you something very similar to a canoe is a kayak. And I had an experience in Lake Tahoe there in California back when I was a kid. I was out kayaking and roll that baby over, and it threw me right into the water. And the problem with Lake Tahoe, it's basically melted snow water. At least a good portion of it is, and it's colder than the bloomin' devil. So I don't care if you're in a canoe or a kayak, you know, when you fall into Lake Tahoe, you know that you got to get out of that as fast as you can. I'll tell you a quick story. Let me buy a nickel about building a raft. I guess I was probably in my middle to late 20s, and we decided to take a vacation up in Northern California and rented a travel trailer. I had some friends come along with us. We got into a beautiful park area right on the water, enjoying ourselves, and I noticed that there was a lot of tree trunks and stuff on the shore between our travel trailer and the water, and I got this idea that why don't I build a raft? And I had a couple of hundred feet of extra rope in the trailer, and I started pulling this stuff into the water and lashing it up with a rope. Talk about, you know, Huckleberry Finn and all his episodes. And one of these logs, as I pulled it off the shore and into the water, stabbed me in my big toe on the right foot. And it shoved a splinter up my toe, probably an inch and a half. And I said, oh my God, what am I going to do about this? Let me buy another nickel. So I decided, well, I'm not going to be able to pull this out myself. So I had one of the other partners get in the car with me. We drove into town, this little tiny town next to this park area. Looked up the local doctor, and he took a look, and he says, I can take care of that. He shot me on the end of the toe with Zolocaine, I think it was. At any rate, the deadening medication that they give you so that when they start pulling things it doesn't hurt. Peeled back the toe a little bit, got this all taken care of, and Kathy, it only cost me $5. $5 to have all this done. And since then I have called him my local veterinarian. KY6V, back to net.
You know, Gordon, I think I remember you telling me that story, and I relayed some of the experiences. I always say, and you well know this, I like to walk barefoot. And I did this in Michigan, in the woods. Didn't want to wear shoes. So, unfortunately, I stepped on some glass. You know, that opened my foot. I think my youngest brother used to run through the woods, and someone tripped him, and he actually fell and bit through his tongue. And the experience we had to go through was very similar to what you're talking about. Not something real interesting. But I'm glad that each of you could come aboard and share. And it would sure be interesting to hear some others with their experiences with boating and making rafts. I might tell you a little bit about the Contiki. But one major thing is about their radio equipment and their connection. And before I go into that, I will throw that out there once again. But let me talk a little bit about the exposition itself and what exactly happened. So let me pause for just a moment. You know, on August the 7th, 1947, a strange vessel crashed on the coral reefs after sailing for 101 days and over 4,300 miles across the Pacific Ocean. Its tanned and weather-beaten crew of six Scandinavians survived the experience and cheerfully planted a souvenir from the source survived the experience on their journey. It was a coconut palm carried on board their vessel. The team included the exposition leader, a navigator, a steward, someone in charge of supplies and daily rations, a radio expert, a radio transmitter, and an engineer. This extraordinary voyage across the Pacific on a raft of balsa wood, named the Contiki, would have an enduring effect on both the scholarly world and the popular culture. Although the exposition carried some modern equipment, such as a radio, watches, charts, sextant, maps, diagrams, and metal knives, they were incidental to the purpose of proving that the raft itself could make the journey and for food, they lived off the fruits of the ocean. The Kon-Tiki carried 257 gallons of drinking water and 56 water cans. For food, they took 200 coconuts, sweet potatoes, bottle gourds, and other assorted fruits and roots. Field rations, tinned food, and survival equipment was also included. The Kon-Tiki demonstrated that it was possible for a primitive raft to sail the Pacific Ocean with relative ease and safety, especially to the west with the wind, and there was no technical reasons to prevent people from South America from having settled in the Polynesian Islands. So I want to know if anyone anywhere knows about the radio connection, the radio equipment, and the importance of that in the Kon-Tiki. So let me throw it once again out there to anyone anywhere who would like to check in. Tell me what you know about the Kon-Tiki and ham radio.
RMO.
6 Vector.
All right, it looks like I have my two favorite people here once again, RMO and 6 Vector. And actually, I know you, Gordon, were walking through, and I wasn't sure if you were going to get back, but I know that you have some information on this. What I want to know is what you know about the radio equipment, the radio connection, and the part it played in the Kon-Tiki. And I will, of course, share a little bit with you. So anyone else, anywhere, like to come aboard and share? Well, I guess not on this point, but I will share some information with you. I'm going to, first of all, call on my backup, KC2RMO, and see what he would like to share about his knowledge of the Kon-Tiki and their radio equipment and what happened during that voyage.
Well, thanks, Kath. You know, I was thinking about when you were reading, you know, the part about the story of the Kon-Tiki, it started me remembering. And this goes back, and it had to have been 1957, because I expect that was that would have been the 10th anniversary of the voyage. Because I recall, I don't think kids get this anymore, but it was the Weekly Reader, or as Rocky and Bullwinkle called it, the Weekly Weeder. It was a gardening magazine, or the Weekly Weeder, I think it was. But I remember in the Weekly Reader, there was a lot of coverage given to the voyage of the Kon-Tiki, and I believe that it went on for an entire month, if I remember it right. So 57 would have been about right, you know, that would have been about the time I was getting the Weekly Reader. I remember talking about it in school, and it was, you know, we were talking about it. So it was still a big deal then, that was something that, you know, was a pretty important discovery. And they discussed that quite a bit, and it was a lot of good reading in that little Weekly Reader, that's for sure. So that was one thing I wanted to mention, I think that's pretty much it. I think that's I had something else, but I forgot, to tell you the truth, which probably everybody else is probably thinking, thank God, I do remember the Weekly Reader business anyway, and that was pretty cool too. So we'll set it back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Well, thank you for sharing about the Weekly Reader. I don't think it's used anymore. What they use now, it's called Scholastic, but they do come out with a lot of great information. I get it for both middle school and high school, and I usually share that with my kids at both mainly at the data house, you know. I work with them with current events, and we use that. But I don't think the Weekly Reader is there anymore. But I'm going to call on Gordon, and hopefully he can share his knowledge of the Kon-Tiki and their radio equipment and their radio connection to our history. I'm sure he can. But I will go through a little bit of it with you, you know. Just think of this, a raft that crashed under a coral reef, all that water and radio equipment, what would have happened? So with that, Gordon, come aboard, and hopefully you can share with us any knowledge you have of the Kon-Tiki their radio equipment and how they did to preserve that radio equipment. So KY6B, come aboard.
Well, thank you, Kathy. You know, my recollection of all of this is a little sparse. But it was a great entry into the history of amateur radio. KY6V here, Gordon. The guys on the Kon-Tiki that were involved with the radio equipment were sharp dudes. This was back in the days when everything was vacuum tube, number one. They were running their system off of what was called then A batteries and B batteries, and they had backup batteries for the voyage. They ran into some difficulties from time to time where equipment was not working right or the batteries were not working right, and they were smart enough to figure out a way of tying batteries together in series with some in parallel to keep their equipment running. They were smart enough to know that when they had a failure on one of their transmitters, that they could redesign their second transmitter to start operating, I think it was in the 20-meter band, or very close to the 20-meter band. I think they were a little out of the amateur spectrum, as I recall. They had shore stations that were monitoring them consistently. Australia, the western part of the United States, Pennsylvania was very strong on the monitoring, as was W1AW. Let me buy a nickel here. So they were able to stay in contact. I think one of the interesting stories here is that they called out a Mayday situation when they were about ready to go aground. And somebody on the West Coast, and I don't recall now where they were located, answered the call, decided that it was a bootlegger that was on there, and this whole thing was just nothing but a Chinese fire and boat drill, and signed off without helping these guys at all. And I think it was an Australian that picked it up from there, as I recall, Kathy. KY6V, over.
You know, that is a fantastic summary, Gordon. And actually, it was Colorado. You were very knowledgeable with this. And I don't have to go through much with that, but that was correct. It was Colorado, and I don't know if it was a student, but they thought it was just a false thing and didn't go any further. And it was actually, I think, Pennsylvania, State College in Pennsylvania. They used a call sign of W3YA. But yes, you had a great explanation, so I'm not going to go any further into that. So we can at least get a little bit into the Titanic. But thank you so much. You would be a great history teacher. Thank you once again. Gary, come back aboard. Tell us about what you think about the equipment. You've heard what Gordon has said. I'm not going to go into a lot with their equipment, but how do you think, you know, they crashed onto this coral reef, all this water coming up, all these fishes coming on board, all the water coming onto their raft. How did they protect that equipment? So KC2RMO from Kehoe 6 Sierra United November, come back aboard.
Well, thanks, Kath. I, first of all, I was kind of surprised when Gordon was talking about how well they were heard in Pennsylvania and Connecticut, which probably is why there was a lot of discussion here, because, of course, we're right in between the two. So it probably would have been able to have been heard here as very well, you know, as well. So my initial guess was that they were on 10 meters, because I was saying, okay, you know, if I was going to put a radio on a raft, on a small raft, I'd need a small antenna and, equipment with a small footprint. And probably 10 would suit that, but 20 makes an awful lot more sense because of the distance, that you're gonna go. So I'm inclined to say, yeah, 20 meters makes a lot more sense. How did they keep that stuff dry? Wow. You have to go back to 1947, and you don't have the plastic wraps and stuff like that that we had today. So I'm going to say that they probably used some sort of a tarry substance. I'm not exactly sure how they did it, but they probably built the stuff into boxes that were sealed up with some sort of pitch, very much like the natives would have used to waterproof the raft. That there was some sort of a tar type of substance involved. Maybe they enclosed the equipment in boxes and sealed it all up with this stuff. So that's my guess. I have no clue. So maybe we'll find out the answer to that. But that's my guess, anywho. And that was fascinating. I did not know that it was heard up in the Northeast, and that's exceptionally cool. But then again, I don't know. Does that count as an expedition? Also, being able to hear Sputnik, because I recall Mr. Spitzer letting me listen to Sputnik on his shortwave. But that's another story. Back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Well, thank you, Gary. But actually, they, like Gordon was saying, they first operated on 40 and 20 meters, second on 10 meters, and then third was on the 6 meters. And, I'm going to talk a little bit about, they had to let the equipment dry out, so actually probably it was soaked. But let me see if Gordon has any response to what you've talked about or any further comments on this radio equipment. And how maybe it was kept dry, or anything he would like to share, because I think he has quite some knowledge on the Contiki. So KY6B, come back aboard.
Well, Kathy, it's been so long ago, I'm a little rusty. KY6B here, Gordon. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the antenna they were using, Gary, was a long wire floated on a balloon. And I think there was some problem at one point with a stowaway bird that was on there that ate the line apart or something or other. But, you talk about all of this filling of the equipment. It reminds me of the old Atwater Kents, with all of that tar down at the bottom of it. But I don't think they were doing that. Salt water is just very damaging, as everybody probably knows, to equipment. They had one heck of a time when they hit that reef and hauling the equipment onto the atoll or whatever it was that they were next to. It took them days to dry this thing out. They had a hand crank generator, Gary. One guy would crank and the other guy would try to load up the transmitter, and it took them several days until they could get to the point where things were dried out, where things started to work. And all of a sudden it happened, and they got a message off, and that was coming to the end of the story, Gary. So back to you, Kathy, KY6V, over.
Super, you've told everyone exactly what I was going to tell them, so there's no need for me to do that. So that pretty much was the adventure of the Contiki. There was no loss of life. It just took them a while to get rescued. It's quite an adventure. I always like to share in April because 1947, I wasn't yet born. Gordon was around. He has quite some knowledge about the Contiki. So there's nothing further to share. But let me throw it out there. for any final check-ins about the Contiki before I just go into a little bit with the Titanic, because that is something that is in our history and very valuable for this month as well. So, Gary, I see you have a comment. I don't know whether it's new or it's old, but why don't you come back aboard and see what you can share with us.
Thanks, Kath. I just, when Gordon was talking about that hand crank generator, I remember, you know, it's funny, the stuff you remember. I mean, I can't even remember this morning, you know, but I remember stuff that happened 50 years ago, you know, 60 years ago. No, 55 years ago. But I remember seeing a picture of somebody on the deck of that raft cranking this thing. Okay, and I vividly remember seeing that picture. They had a still of that, probably in the Weekly Reader. But I was wondering, and maybe Gordon might have an idea about this too. There was a radio set that was, it was probably Army. You know, it was kind of a popular Army field radio that was called, I may have the nomenclature slightly mixed up, but it was the ANGR/9. They nicknamed it the Angry 9. I don't know what bands that operated on, but I'm wondering if that maybe was what they used, because that was a hand crankable thing. It had its own built-in power supply. You crank this thing and, you know, you talk. So I wonder if maybe that was it. I'm just throwing that out for a speculative comment. KC2RMO, back to the net.
Well, I'll tell you what, my memory is pretty light on all of this, Gary, but I'll answer that. KY6V, it's my understanding. I'm not familiar with an ARG9, but I assume that the hand crank generator was of the World War II vintage. I believe, and I think I'm correct in this statement, Gary, that the radios that they were operating were a World War II vintage. Seems to me they had a national receiver or something in there somewhere, but I'd have to go look that back up. And the transmitters that they were using were spy transmitters, European vintage, used for communication during World War II when somebody was under the cover, under the cloak, if you will, sending spotting information on troop movement and so on and so forth. I believe that's the type of gear they were using, sir. Over.
I'm here. I'm really here. I had the Echolink client in the background. It was I was looking up that radio. It's a thing called the AN. Boy, you talk about a military nomenclature, right? It is the AN/GRC-9, aka the Angry 9. It could do CW amplitude modulation and continuous wave, modulated continuous wave signals between 2 and 12 megacycles. That was apparently a World War II vintage, and they used this thing all the way right through Vietnam. Spy radio is even cooler. To heck with the Angry 9. It may be legendary, but I'm you know, give me the spy radio every time. That's awesome. Good to hear. Good to know. And we'll go back to that. KC2RMO, back to you, Kat.
Okay, thank you both, Gordon and Gary. And actually, Rick has a comment. And Steve put in the text box what I was going to share. You know, like Gordon said, the Contiki's radio were built both from scratch and also from secret sabotage sets from the World War II, but they used an NSC-173 receiver, and that's what Steve put in the text box for everyone. Let me throw it to N1VXP, see what his comment is, any further information, before we move on and talk a little bit about the Titanic. But I'll call in Rick, and if anyone else has any other comments, I sure hope that you'll come back aboard. So with that, N1DXP, what's your comment this evening?
This is N1DXP. I put in the text box a link for that radio, and yeah, it was a general coverage HF and 6 meters, and apparently it only costs $189.50 new with the speaker. So ham radio back then was not that expensive, considering it sounded like it was a pretty good radio. The link I put in shows a nice picture of the radio and another little advertisement about that radio as well. N1TXP back to net control.
All right. Thank you so much, Rick, for that. And I did see the link. So anyone, if you have the text box up, there's a link there. So let me ask anyone anywhere, any other comments you want to make about the Contiki? Any information that we shared that you would like to talk about before we go into a little bit with the Titanic? Won't get too much into detail. But, you know, they both had ham radio equipment and in the history. They both had, not as much a disaster in the Contiki as the Titanic, but they're very similar. So anyone anywhere have any other comments before we move on? All right. We'll move on from the Contiki to the Titanic. And, you know, this is something that's quite in our history. We've seen movies. We've heard different things. We've been involved in this up until just recently, you know, with them discovering the Titanic. And I was hoping that Daryl would be here tonight because it's in his area. But let me share a little bit with you, and then we're going to ask for check-ins, and we'll talk a little bit about their radio equipment. But let me pause here just for a moment. You know, late on the night of April 14th, and that's just past, 1912, the Titanic was sailing in the North Atlantic Ocean on its trip from Southampton, England to New York City. The ship was built in Belfast, Ireland, and it cost approximately $7.5 million to build. It was designed to hold 32 lifeboats, though only 20 were on board. The ship's management was concerned that too many lifeboats would destroy the beauty of the ship. Only 1,178 individuals could use lifeboats, which was much smaller than the maximum capacity of the Titanic, which was 3,600. The work took longer than expected due to design changes and a temporary pause in work. Had the Titanic been finished earlier, she might well have missed her rendezvous with an iceberg. The ship was designed to be the last word in comfort and luxury, with an onboard gymnasium, a swimming pool, libraries, high-class restaurants, and cabins. The Titanic boasted electric elevators, a swimming pool, a squash court, a Turkish bath, and a gymnasium with a mechanical horse and mechanical camel. She also had a powerful wireless telegraph provided for the convenience of passengers, as well as for operational use. Though she had advanced safety features such as watertight compartments and remotely activated watertight doors, she lacked enough lifeboats to accommodate all of those aboard. The Titanic had around a crew of 885 members on board for her maiden voyage. Let me pause here for a moment. More than 3 million rivets were used in building the Titanic. It had three anchors, which had a combined weight of 31 tons. It had a number of unique features, including a hospital with an operating room. And I told you about the swimming pool and the squash court. Third-class accommodations had only two bathtubs, one for men and one for women, which had to serve more than 700 passengers. For what would be their final meal on the Titanic, first-class passengers were served an 11-course meal. The Titanic's food inventory reportedly included 1,700 quarts of ice cream, 36,000 oranges, 1,500 gallons of milk, 7,000 heads of lettuce. In addition, there was 8,000 cigars and 1,500 bottles of wine. So, at this point, I'd like to see if we have any check-ins that would like to come aboard. Tell us about their knowledge of the Titanic, the sinking of it, the recovery of any passengers, the radio equipment before we move on. So any check-ins at this point, please come aboard.
Victor X-ray Papa.
And RMO.
And 6 Victor.
All right, I'll see what each of these three fine gentlemen. You know, guys and gals out there, we have a lot of stations connected. Sure hope you're listening, but we'd sure like to hear from you this evening. What do you know about the Titanic? Because it's, you know, there's been movies out there, there's been books, and they've done some recovery, so you I'm sure know something. And actually, you've seen that fantastic ship. But let me start with VXP, see what you want to share with us this evening. And Rick, I know you are a history buff. You go on the History Channel, you probably check books, and you probably have a lot of knowledge of the Titanic. So what would you like to share with us this evening?
This is N1VXP. Yeah, I did a little research, and I remember last year. The only thing that I kind of said to myself, it seems a little strange. You know, they said they have watertight doors. That would have been great for providing. I know there was some discussion on this, and I think a documentary that showed the fact that those compartments were not really watertight. Apparently, in the construction, somebody said, oh, it would cost too much. So they had the walls put up, but they had no roof or no ceiling that would have completely sealed each of the compartments. So if they would have gone with the original construction on the ship, the water would not have been able, you know, it probably would have done some pretty nasty damage, but the water wouldn't have been able to go from compartment to compartment because there would have been a ceiling over each of the compartments, which would have made them more like a bubble on each one. And yeah, it may not have done, you know, it probably would have sank, but I think there would have been a chance for at least some way of not sinking so quick. But it was something when I heard about that, I said, wow. Their compartments were not completed as the original design, so that's probably why it went down so quick. But still always learning something new. It seems like every time, let me drop for a second. You know, it always seems to be that somebody comes up with a new documentary or a movie on it and always finds something new to learn about the ship itself. I think over the time that when the Titanic was around, that yeah, that would have been the luxury of ship travel from Europe to the Americas. But you know, thinking about today with the cruise lines, that they try to do a similar type of a thing, but. I don't know, the ships, today's cruise ships are much smaller in length and they seem to have more people and I don't know, to me it sounds like it would have been quite an experience to travel on a ship back then and quite the luxury. N1GXP back to net control.
Well, you know, Rick, I agree. I've never been on a cruise, so not sure I'm interested in doing one. Some of those cabins are quite small. And but I know Russell, NSK, he goes on cruises quite often, and I think he's got another one coming up. But, you know, as far as I've checked out, you know, it's very small cabin, not like what the Titanic was. And but I guess it would be fun to be on a ship sailing across the ocean. But we've been having an awful lot of disasters with the cruises and, you know, most recently this ferry in South Korea. So not sure I'm interested in being one of those. But thank you so much. I hope to share just a little bit more about what happened and, you know, the recovery and the disaster that was there and maybe some of the things that they've actually recovered. I believe the ship itself is at the bottom of the ocean, about 12,000 feet. Thinking of that, I think about the Malaysian flight where they are searching with that submarine. I think that's what they're talking about, that depth. So, you know, that's quite a depth. I'm not sure anyone would dive that depth. So with that, thank you, Rick. I'm going to pick up Mr. Gary, RMO, see what he would like to share with us about his knowledge of the Titanic, radio equipment, the radio room, the survivors, the pickup of the survivors, the actual sinking, or anything you'd like to share, Mr. Gary. So please come aboard.
What I want to know is who's this guy named Goldberg that they hit? I mean, no, wait a minute. Actually, what I wanted to share here was, and I don't know how well known this is, but David Sarnoff, who went on to become chairman of the board of RCA, was in some degree, and it's kind of a controversy to the degree of which he was involved, but as a young wireless operator for the Marconi Company at the Wanamaker Station, which was in the Wanamaker Department Store in New York City, believe it or not, they had apparently wireless stations and department stores back then, but he claims to have been the first person to intercept the CQD signal from the Titanic, which was they used that before they used SOS. They would do CQD, you know, CQ distress. So he claims to have been the first person to have heard that and relayed the message. There is some contradictory, of course, Sarnoff isn't around anymore to verify that, but there's some contradictory evidence to suggest that there were three other operators also receiving that. He was a young man at the time. I don't think he was in his teens. You know, there may be some issue because he was so young. But I guess, you know, young guys were... it was not uncommon for a person of that age to be involved in something like that. So, at any rate, there is a connection between Sarnoff, who becomes the head of RCA, which, you know, we all know the impact of RCA on radio and communications in general, and the Titanic. And it's an interesting bit of speculation, but. Definitely the news relayed to the world came through the Wanamaker station, and that's the name of that tune. So we'll go back to that. This is KC2RMO. Back to you, Kath.
And actually, that was part I was going to share about the SOS and the Morse code and the CQD, but you pretty much went over that. But I'll share a little bit more. But I want to hear from Gordon, first of all, and see what knowledge he has of the Morse code, the CQD, the SOS, and maybe any other information he has in his memory bank about the Titanic. So KY6D from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, what can you share with us this evening?
Well, thank you, Kathy. You know, my memory bank is getting aged. So some of the information is spotty, but from things that I'm hearing from others like Gary and Rick are bringing back memories. You know, back in 1912, our capacity for transmitting signals was primarily from the spark gap area. Okay? And the Titanic was a vessel that was equipped with the latest state-of-the-art by Marconi, I might add, and I'm going to amplify on that in a minute, and had a good station aboard. And Gary is absolutely, totally correct that the original distress call prior to SOS coming in vogue was CQD. The operators on the Titanic sent out the distress call using both vogues. They'd send one out in CQD and they would send one out in SOS because it had recently changed. And I believe it was the Carpathia, if I'm remembering correctly, the vessel Carpathia that responded first and was instrumental in doing what they could, but, you know, they were 3 days out from the damaging sinking point of the Titanic. Now, getting back to Marconi, it is alleged that the Marconi organization, which was very strong and popular in supplying communication equipment and so on and so forth in that particular period of time, did something that they probably shouldn't do and or have done. They squelched all this incoming traffic from the Titanic and the Carpathian and so on so that they could capitalize on what information was going out, as I recall. So some of it was down and dirty, Kathy, if my memory is correct. KY6V, back to Nat.
Your memory's quite well. That's excellent information. Actually, you know, the California was only about 20 minutes away from the Titanic when it started sinking, but somehow that radio operator was not on duty, and they didn't hear the signal. So the Carpathia, like you said, was approximately 4 hours away. And it responded, but by the time it got to the Titanic, it had already sunk. You know, it only took about 2.5 hours to sink. So, and you are correct about Marconi. He wanted the story, so he withheld all information. You know, no one was to report anything because he wanted the original story, so you were correct in that. And, you know, it's quite a history. Looking back at all of this and seeing how could this have happened, you know, and but it's part of our history. You know, like I said, you know, the wreck remains about 12,000 feet. It was rediscovered, actually, in 1985, but, you know, I think they've been bringing a few things up, but most of it still remains at the bottom because it's breaking apart. But, you know, I appreciate each and every one of you for coming aboard with that information because it's been fantastic. I'm going to share just a little bit more with you, but let's see if we have any other check-ins. Ones we haven't heard from maybe this evening that would like to come aboard, say hi to us. You don't have to give us information about Contiki or Expositions or Titanic, but maybe you just want to check in and say good evening. So at this point, I'm going to throw it out there to anyone, anywhere, before I start winding down to see if you'd like to check in.
Victor Hotel.
AC9YZR.
AB3HGC.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone. I think the final call I had was through the NNA-HDC, and if I have that wrong, I apologize. But I have three check-ins. Victor Hotel, YZR, HDC. Is there anyone else anywhere that would like to talk to us this evening about Expositions, Contiki, Titanic, or just to say hi? So let me throw it out there once again and see if we have any additional check-ins.
The call was Kilo Bravo 3 Hotel Golf Charlie.
All right, I've got it. Hotel Golf Charlie. Welcome to South Coast this evening. I'm not sure if we talked before, but Thanks for coming aboard. Let me start with Victor Hotel and see what he would like to share with us this evening. You know, Steve, you're a educator, and you maybe are in technology, but you probably have quite some knowledge with both these events. So, what would you like to share with us this evening?
Well, Kathy, my grandfather had a book written in the time period that had all of the, well, not all of the testimony, but a lot of the testimony from the hearings that happened in the U.S. after the Titanic incident. And I read that and learned a lot. And I guess my favorite little piece of trivia for the Titanic is that it was on fire from the time it left port. The Titanic was a coal-fired ship, and they had a coal bunker that was on fire as they left. It burned until it sank, and there was some discussion of the fact that there may have been a problem with the steel, and then on top of that, the fire providing heat to the hull, which would be very hot on the inside and very cold on the outside, may have allowed the iceberg to do more damage than might normally be expected. So that's a little piece of trivia for the Titanic that I keep in my pocket. Everyone have a good night, KF5VH.
Well, Steve, thanks for sharing that. Actually, any of the information I have not heard that at all, so thanks for sharing that. I bet you that's very valuable to you. I think you said your grandfather, so hopefully you'll keep that for posterity and look at it quite often. But yes, this is a quite a part of our history, something we always go back to in history classes, and I always love sharing this in April on our VRIP nets, and I hope that no one ever loses interest in that because it's quite interesting to me. So, Mr. Bernie, KC9YZR, what would you like to share with us tonight? Titanic, Contiki, expositions you've had to the mall, to the radio room, to Home Depot, or maybe you just want to check in this evening. But thanks for being here. Come aboard.
Okay, there, Kathy, just waiting for my note to finish up IDing. I've got IDing in voice now, where it says KC9YZR, you know. Instead of using the CW mode there, because that one guy was all bothered about that I wasn't identifying myself last Tuesday night. It was during the North American Handshaker net, too, and so they could hear him tell me twice, Bernard. He called me Bernard. He says, you got to identify yourself every 10 minutes. He said that twice. I go, I am IDing myself in CW. So I switched it over to voice there. Hopefully that'll make him happy. He never did identify himself, so I recognize his voice, though, as Jason there, JC9MIJ. So anyway, as far as expedition goes, I had a whole bunch of different things that ran through my mind. I'm going to reset here. Anyway, I hope I'm coming through okay. And I was reminded of when I was in grade school, we had, what do they call them, field trips, school field trips, I guess they were called. And I was very, very little at the time in grade school. I don't remember what grade it was. If I was in second grade or third grade, I don't remember what grade I was in anymore. But it must have been second grade or third grade, because I know by the time fourth grade came about, I was in another school. Anyhow, we went to the CBS studios. It was Channel 7. I think it was the first TV station in the area. And it was the studios were originally put in a house. But then later on, they built the new studios that they moved into. But they were still in the original building when I was first there. And they had two bleachers full of students. And then they were serving them hot dogs to keep them settled down. Because a lot of the kids wouldn't be settled down. I was on the side that was settled down mostly. And they were running out of hot dogs. So what they did is they cut them in half, but I didn't mind. They put us on TV. And as far as the ships go, well, I don't have much to add there. I thought I had heard that the watertight doors didn't go all the way up to the top, all the way up to the ceiling. I thought maybe it was something with the construction. And maybe they didn't go all the way up to the top. And I guess once one compartment flooded, then it tipped just enough for the water to flow over the top of the doors. So that's what I thought I heard anyway. And I think they said that it could stay afloat with four compartments flooded, but not five. And I guess it was five that had flooded. I don't know. I don't know for sure. I actually have the documentary here. I should watch it again, see what it has all to say. I actually have the movie, too, with Leonardo DiCaprio in there. Most people know that he was in that movie, but how many know it was Kate Winslet that did the part of the lady there? Anyway, I got that movie. Got it used for $5 on two VCR videotapes. I thought that was a pretty good movie there. I was watching that on the news just before you guys were on here. Well, actually, I think right at the start of the internet, they were talking about that one that you were talking about lately that happened there in South Korea or whatever. They were talking about the mistakes they had made and how they didn't have the guys leave right away or evacuate right away and stuff like that. So I hadn't seen too much of that up until this evening. So I guess I'll hand it back over to you. Kathy, one more thing about down in Florida. When I lived there in 81 to 83, I was going between West Palm Beach, I think it was, and Lake Okeechobee, and somewhere in between there. I don't know if it's actually a community called Indian Town or if that's just what they nicknamed it, but there must have been 2 acres of soda pop machines. They look like rows and rows of soda machines. I thought to myself, I wish I would have had a camera or would have went in there and counted how many there were, because I've never seen so many soda machines in one place. And also, for a while I lived in Jupiter, Florida, about halfway between Burt Reynolds Ranch and Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater. And they had 2 helicopters, one for his father and one for himself. And I said Reynolds on the side. And every once in a while, especially on a Sunday morning, I'd see it go overhead because I lived on Limestone Creek Road. I lived right near where he was, where he lived there. And one time I rode my moped. We had mopeds down there. I rode it down to Lantana, Florida, and they had a Christmas tree. It was right across the railroad tracks from National Enquirer. And here I found out that that Christmas tree came all the way from up here, only 25 miles northwest of my hometown here where I live now. I thought that was kind of interesting that the Christmas tree that was down there in Lantana, Florida, came from only 25 miles from home here. I even knew the driver's name. 73 and back to net, K6SUN, KC9YZR.
Well, Bernie, thanks so much for sharing that. Yes, Indian Town is a not too far south. I have a lot of students that actually come from Indian Town, especially my one location. Lake Okeechobee is not that far. Jupiter is not that far. So we'll be moving into Port St. Lucie. It's a little bit, further south than Vero Beach, but all locations just directly in my area. And thanks for sharing all that information with us tonight. And before I close, I'm going to actually talk to you about, the retrieval of those bodies and what exactly happened. But let me pick up, I believe the name is Grant, Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, KB3HGC. I hope that you're still there and listening, because I'd actually like to get an email address from you so I can send you information about South Cars. So, Grant, please come aboard.
I am still here, yes, correct. The name is Grant here in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, located in Delaware County. It's a suburb of Philadelphia. The email address, you can send email to kb3hgc@arrl.com, and that will reach me. And I really don't have too much to add tonight. I was just listening while I was updating my log here, and I thought I'd chime in and say hi. So hello to everybody, and I'll give it back to Net Control. This is KB3HGC.
Well, Grant, welcome to South Cars. My name is Kathy. Call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm actually the net manager for the VOIP session. And we always like to send emails out to new people that come aboard, but we always like to encourage you to be added to our membership as well. We always tell you it's free. It doesn't cost you a thing. And, we can do that tonight, or I can send that email. Your call sign at ARRL.com, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, Grant, I'll send you an email probably in the morning. I'll give you our schedule in case you can come back and check in. And I will most definitely try to encourage you to join our fantastic organization. I'll do that by email. And once again, we have Annette's on Saturdays and Sundays and some once a month on Thursday. We have a lot of topics. So tomorrow morning, we're actually going to talk about Easter. We have a net control that will come aboard and just try to get you to come aboard and tell us what you're doing for Easter. So, Grant, thanks for coming aboard through the NNA repeater in Newtown Square, and I hopefully you have enjoyed. But look for an email from me in the next few days, and maybe we can encourage you to join our fantastic organization. So with that, I'm going to pause here for a moment, each and every one of you, and tell you just some concluding information about that loss of life and the retrieval of the bodies, which maybe some of you didn't know. I'll ask for some final check-ins, and then we'll close. So let me pause for a moment. You know, we've heard about the SOS and the CQD. We've heard a lot about the Titanic and the Contiki. But maybe some of you did not know about the retrieval of those bodies. Once the massive loss of life became known, ships were chartered to retrieve the bodies. Each ship left with embalming supplies, undertakers, and clergy. In mid-May 1912, three bodies were recovered over 200 miles from the site of the sinking. The first body recovery ship to reach the site of the sinking found so many bodies that the embalming supplies aboard were quickly exhausted, and health regulations required that only embalmed bodies could be returned to port. It was decided to preserve only the bodies of the first-class passengers, justifying their decision by the need to visually identify wealthy men to resolve any disputes over large estates. So as a result, third-class passengers and crew were buried at sea. So with that, that's our program for this evening about expositions, Contiki, Titanic, and anything you had to share with us. But are there any final check-ins that would like to come aboard before I call on Gary to close this evening? If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right, hearing nothing, Mr. Gary, my backup, KC2RMO, can you close for this evening with our closing? Thanks for being my backup, and hopefully everyone enjoyed this evening. So KC2RMO, I'm going to throw it your direction.
Thanks, Kathy, for a great net tonight. It was a lot of fun, and it always is. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Kathy, K6SUN, saying 73, I'm saying 73.2, this is KC2RMO, and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.